I saw the light, I saw the light. No more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy, no sorrow inside. Praise the Lord, I saw the light.
Alan can be a miserable bugger. He came round today and no sooner had he poured the tea than he said, "I'm not the man you think I am. By this time next year I shall be bald." "I never thought you were Leo Sayer," I said. "I'm being serious," he said. "So am I," I said. It seems the poor man is molting, but unlike the cat, his hair is not going to grow back. I do feel sorry for him, but I don't see why he thought it fitting to impart this information. And then he made matters worse by reeling off a list of reasons why he would disappoint me. I tried not to interrupt, really I did, but this was too silly. Especially when he pointed out he was not a rich man. I may not get out as much as I used to, but even I know that Bill Gates was never the manager in Sketchley's. And Alan has his own car, his own house, he's out at work all day, he's a good catch for the right woman. And then I went cold. The right woman. Maybe that was why he was telling me this. Maybe he was trying to say that he'd met someone else. I mean, we're only friends and a man has his needs. He's never even asked me for me hand to go courting. And why would he? I'm a blind, crippled spinster in a wheelchair. I'm Davros without the Daleks. I've got no money. I live in the house in which I was born with a mother who hates me. And as I was thinking this, I knew I'd have to stop or it was going to make me cry. And what use would that have done? "Do you need the toilet?" he asked. "No," I said. "What makes you think I need the toilet?" He was reluctant at first, but then spoke up. "I just wondered if your bag was full. You had that look on your face like when your bag needs changing," he said. I hate it when he refers to my bag. I'm not a flipping Hoover. "The word is catheter," I said. "Ah, that's the word," he said. I was furious by now. Not only had he humiliated me, but in doing so he'd stopped my self-flagellation. And I really do not find his potty talk attractive. It has no place in my mother's front parlour. I sipped my tea and took a bite of my ginger nut. I tried to hold it in, but I couldn't bite my tongue, so I asked him if he'd met someone else. Of course he denied this, which neither proved nor disproved anything. He's hardly likely to tell me if he had. Not that I've a right to pose the question, as there is nothing between us. There was a sudden rattling of the tea things and the sound of the coffee table being scraped across the floor. The next thing I felt was Alan's hand on my left foot. It was this that alerted me that something was going on. He's never touched my left foot before. "I'm not good at this sort of thing," he said. "Will you marry me?" I didn't know what to say. And before I could say anything, he pushed a small box into my hand. "It's only Elizabeth Duke," he said, "but it's a real diamond." I was all of a flutter, not least because this was so sudden and unexpected. When he said he was going to call round, he didn't even hint that this was what was on his mind. The one time the subject had come up between us, we were watching Emmerdale, and I told him I was too old and ugly to even think about it. Well, of course, this new twist of events only served to make me look foolish. I assumed he was still on one knee, and indeed, I touched his shoulder when I reached out for him. "Well," he said. "I don't know what to say," I said. "You could try yes," he said. And I wanted to, but my only thought was who will give me away? Which I know sounds daft, but that was what was popped into me head. And then I started thinking about how I'd keep the train of me dress from getting wound in me wheels. I mean, it's hardly as if I could have Cousin Carly traipsing behind. It wouldn't look right. And then I thought, I shouldn't go for the full dress, and that I should get something I could wear again. Not a trouser suit, though. But my main thought, apart from what shoes I should wear, was who would give me away. "I can't stay down here for long," he said. "The poor love has bad knees." "You don't have to give me an answer now. You can take your time and think about it," he said. He had a note of defeat in his voice, which is not something I like to see in a big man. I removed my hand from his shoulder and let him stand up. "Alan," I said, "of course I'll marry you." He was that happy that he kissed me. I've known him for 3 years, and I've sometimes wondered what it would be like to kiss him. Not often, you understand, but often enough. And it was nice. When you're in a wheelchair, you get two reactions. Either people don't see you, or they feel sorry for you. Obviously, I am at an advantage being blind. I don't get to see the ignorant beggars that ignore me. The downside is I get double sympathy from the rest of them. I understand it is a natural reaction. It would be even worse if they knew about my depression. Though that would be rubbing folks' nose in it. They've got plenty enough reasons to feel superior without me handing them more ammunition by revealing my soul. I thought I'd tell you this now. After all, some people are a bit slow on the uptake and might be wondering why I'm past 35 and still living with me mother. Her attitude is that I should try me best, wear a smile and let the others do the worrying for me. I do try, for the most part. It's just that some days I get to feeling low, and that's when the feelings start. I don't want you to get the idea that I'm complaining, because really I'm not. It's just that since Alan and me set the date without having an engagement party, tongues have started wagging. And some people, no names, no pack drill, have started saying unkind things, you know the sort of thing. I'll bet she didn't need much chasing. Or, they're getting on with things, I wonder when it's due. I even got it from the paper boy this morning. I hear you're up the duff, he said. I didn't know where to look. And I was too busy making sure he'd give me the right change to come back with a quick reply. Bugger off, I said. Cheeky beggar. He comes from a wrong lot. There's not a shop round here that'll serve his light-fingered mother. I was more annoyed that it made me swear than at the impudence of what he'd actually said. But, to be honest, it is something that's been playing on me mind since Alan chose me for his bride. It's not something that's easy to find answers to. I mean, I'm not getting any younger. And the chances of me actually falling are quite slim. And even if I do get lucky, then the chances of carrying it are not that great. Some days it's as much as I can do to sit up straight. It tends to be on the days when I'm feeling low. And something else that worries me is whether Alan has considered the full implication of me sitting in this chair all day. Oh, I know he's a man and all that, but... And I know that he loves me. Even so, I can't help but wonder how he'll cope. But I suppose I'm one of nature's optimists. I tell myself that all this worrying is just getting me down. I mean, there's plenty of women older than me that manage to have children. And just because I'm aware of the problems, there's no reason Alan will find me insurmountable. I really should go and discuss this with a professional. But it's finding the opportunity, because unless they come here, which they won't because of the cutbacks, that leaves only Mother or Alan to take me to them. And I definitely don't want Mother thinking about my emotional life. And if I went with Alan, it'd be too much like marriage guidance, and I don't want to tempt fate. Mind. Since the engagement, Alan has not been backwards in coming forwards. He comes round at least 3 times a week to watch the television. And I can tell when Mother leaves the room because he's on me, kissing me, and he never stops until she comes back. It's like being a teenager again. Well, I might not have full feelings in that region because of the accident, but I am beginning to rediscover the thrill I used to have as a girl. Not that I was that sort of girl, but I did have my moments. I wasn't what you'd call a looker, but I was always getting compliments on the attractiveness of my eyes. I don't want you to think that I had any trouble getting offers from nice-looking lads. And I must have some of that spirit left within me, because Alan is a very passionate kisser. And he's very gentle for a big man. And I know what you're thinking, I should take consolation from these expressions of physical love as proof that I don't have anything to worry about. And I do wish it were true that love will always win out in the end. Perhaps I should take up knitting again. Knitting is a great stress reliever. I can't follow a pattern, of course, but I could easily make a scarf. But now I'm worrying about this, since I have a great deal of frustration, and if I set off with a scarf, I know I wouldn't stop until I got my place in the Guinness Book of Records. I was in the Kirkgate today with Mother. She needed a few bits and pieces, and I wanted to look for a pair of shoes. The plan was to go to Leeds, but by the time she had finished faffing about, it was past 12, and neither of us felt like going all that way. Honestly, the way that woman fusses. First, she couldn't find her spectacles case. I told her from the off it would be in her chair, but she was adamant that it was in her handbag. And of course, she couldn't find that. So she sets about turning the house upside down and was charging about upstairs when I slipped my hand down the side of her chair and there it was, just as I said it would be. And because I found it, she had to make a song and dance about what she'd done with her handbag. I sometimes think we must have a poltergeist because she never finds things in the places where she says she's left them. Eventually, we managed to get into town. It would have been about 2 o'clock when the doors of the lift opened in the Kirk Gate and I heard her. She was standing by W.H. Smith. I said, "Mother, does that woman look like me?" "What woman?" she said. "The woman preaching the word of God," I said. "She does a bit." "Why?" she said. "I want to speak to her," I said. We got over to her just as the security arrived. She was very professional in her manner. She could have argued with them, but instead she blessed them and praised their diligence. This impressed me. I think Mother had gone off my rocker when I suggested we have coffee together, which, if truth be told, was an inspired idea, since it was a touchy situation. The security in the Kirk Gate can get very funny about this sort of thing. I've known people thrown out for less. Mother went to get the coffee. I sat at the table with the woman at the coffee place by the escalators. She told me her name was Janice, and I sensed this very strange feeling of bonding between us, which is not only something that doesn't happen very often, but is also something I usually ignore, because at heart I'm an intensely practical person. Yet, somehow with Janice, I wanted to feel it, and didn't find it frightening. It was as if we were communicating telepathically. And then she reached out and touched my hand. Now, I don't want you to get the wrong idea, but when she did this, I felt this blue light that seemed to flow from her. This light travelled up my arm, through my shoulder, before dividing to travel up my neck into my head and down through my body. I felt like the Ready Brett Kid, the main difference being that I had a blue light and he was surrounded by a red one. And in this blue light, I had this strange feeling of calm and love. It was not dissimilar to the feeling that I have when Alan kisses me, or when a bed mat runs up me back when you're half awake. It's sort of chilling, and at the same time thrilling and all-encompassing, but not frightening. "I'm pleased you've heard my message," she said. "What message?" I said, and her finger moved down to caress my ring. This forced me to withdraw my hand. Just at that moment, Mother returned with refreshment, and thankfully she took over the conversation. I withdrew to nibble my muffin. It feels weird talking about it, but it was like Janice was my guardian angel, or maybe it was fate. Some higher power had determined that Janice and I should meet. But even as I think about it, it sounds daft. Nothing annoys me more than the idea that the blind have special powers. People are always saying that my hearing will improve now that my eyes have gone. And all this talk about blue lights is a little too Helen Keller for my taste. Only, as I sat there, in the blue light, I got the sense that everything was going to be all right. Obviously, I was still going to be a blind cripple. I'm not talking miracles here. And I'm still going to have cellulite. But the other doubts about Alan and the future, they seemed diminished. And then I stopped myself, because to carry on down that path would only lead to madness. I was sitting in the Kirk Gate, and this absence of fear was based on nothing more than the touch of a woman who caused a disturbance in Summerfield's car park, and it certainly wasn't going to solve the problem of who was going to give me away, or where I'd find the right shoes, or bring back the father who passed over in the same accident that snapped my spine. No, was it going to make Mother a more caring person? A fact proved by the sentence that pulled me back to reality. "God is one thing, and paying the council tax is another," she said.